You should go.
I wanted to go with you. I'm not interested in going by myself.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. Don't feel bad about it. Shit like this happens. I'm frustrated, but I won't abandon him. Disheartening as it is that just as soon as we had a chance to do something fun, an episode had to come along and throw a wrench in things, I understand that this is what Reese was talking about, the sorts of issues I signed up for.
You really need to go, he says.
I'm just gonna turn in for the night, I think. I'm tired anyway. I head into the bedroom and close the door. Emptiness rises within me. I'm all alone. A part of me expects Reese to come in here and console me, to shake out of the state he's in and go out to the show because he cares about me so much. Intellectually, I get that it doesn't work that way. Doesn't keep me from wishing that something would change, and he would hurry in and apologize for his curt behavior, hop into some nice clothes, and dash off to the theater with me. That's a pipe dream. But it's a shame that tonight won't be a fun, frisky time with Reese. This is part of the package. I knew that getting into this. I've seen him struggle with this before. I want to be here for him. But he isn't letting me in, and it's frustrating as fuck. I decide to get ready for bed, hoping he'll come in and join me when he's feeling better. But I wait, and wait, and wait. He stays in the living room. I don't hear him get up and move, not even to go to the bathroom. And it concerns me too much to stay in here and to act like nothing's going on. He knows what's happening, and if we just ignore this, that's not going to help him get any better. I head back into the living room. He's right where I left him a few hours ago. He stares at the ceiling until I move closer, and he looks at me for a moment. I don't see the usual look of appreciation in his eyes. I see that distant, cold gaze. It makes me sad. Feeling any better? I ask.
A little.
If anything, he looks even worse than when I told him I was going to bed, like he's just been stewing in self-destructive thoughts. I imagine him replaying that time in Fallujah again and again in his head, thinking about all that happened, all that could have happened. I imagine him thinking about what Caleb did and how helpless he felt in it all. I kick at the base of the couch, hitting my toe lightly against it. As I gaze down at it, I see something out of the corner of my eye. It's an envelope on the floor, on the other end of the couch. It has crinkled marks in the middle, as though someone gripped it tight. My curiosity gets the best of me. Is this what set him off? Is this the thing that made him go from being totally cool today to being this shell of a person tonight? I meander over to it, trying to act casual, like I'm not up to no good. But given the state he's in, I wonder if he'll even notice. I grip the letter between my toes and kick my leg behind me, grabbing it. As he shifts his head, turning to the TV, I take a glance to see who the letter's from. Melanie. His ex-wife. Reese, I say. He keeps staring ahead. He's gone. And regardless of why he's gone, it's like he's not even here. And it's the most painful and lonely feeling in the world. This must have been what he would do to her. Why she couldn't stay. My face trembles and my eyes water. I'm not proud. I shouldn't be about to break down when I know what's causing this. But as impersonal as it is, it feels so deeply personal. I walk around the couch so that I'm standing in front of him, so that he has to look at me. Reese, why didn't you tell me you got this? I display the letter. He looks at it for a moment before his gaze drifts.
What about it?
This is why you're acting like this, isn't it? Jesus, Reese, you should have just told me. It's about more than that. This is clearly part of it, though. Talk to me. I want to help you.
You can't help me, Jay. No one can help me.
I've never heard him like this. He sounds so hopeless. So overwhelmed. Therese, I know, is a fighter. Even when it gets hard, things like this come up, but he knows how to get through them.
It's more than that stupid letter, he says. All that did was remind me of a mistake I was about to make.
A mistake?
We can't do this.
Reese, you've gotten through shit like this plenty of times.
This isn't about this episode. It's about us. This isn't going to work.
He might as well have decked me. I opened my mouth a few times, trying to think of how to react to this.
I can't do that again, he says. I'm not ready for a relationship. That letter just reminded me that it's too much.
What kind of bullshit is that? Is he being fucking serious right now? Is that why he's so upset? Here I thought he was having some sort of breakdown over the past, but really, he's just dreading the idea of a future with me? No. My mind races through all the beautiful moments we've shared. The moments when I could feel us getting so much closer. That wasn't a lie. But I've thought that before. I thought that with Kyle and the other assholes. Have I been fooling myself this whole time? Have I been feeling so much more for him than he's been feeling for me? I refuse to believe that. Are you telling me that this whole fucking time that we've been doing all this shit together, you haven't felt anything for me? It's just been this fun thing without any deeper feelings behind it? More than fucking. Because it sure was more than that for me. I don't say it. But I can't help it. I have to know. Because if he really doesn't feel this way for me now, then I need to get the fuck out of here. It's only going to hurt worse the longer he lets it go on. I'm falling in love with you. He looks at me, his eyes wide in horror. Like that's the worst fucking thing I could have said to him. I feel like I did when I wore those panties for him, naked, exposed, but in the worst possible way. He sits up. It's the most he's moved since I came home. He rises to his feet.
Love? Are you out of your mind?
He sounds pissed.
We've been seeing each other for 2 months. And you're gonna tell me you love me? You don't know me. You don't know who the fuck I am, and I don't know you.
I've never seen him like this before. Has he really been hiding this side of himself all along?
Why are you being so mean? I ask. His gaze drifts. You can't handle this.
What?
This is going to be too much for you. And you might not leave me today or tomorrow, but one day you will, just like Melanie did.
How can you say that? You haven't even given me a chance.
I don't need to give you a chance. I know how you are. You've lived your life running from your problems, and this one is too much for you to handle. Melanie was a strong woman, a dedicated woman, and it was too much even for her. That's what getting that letter reminded me.
I'm still here, aren't I? I do always run, but you've given me a reason to stay. I can prove to you that I'm strong enough for this. After all that we've shared, are you really willing to just walk away from this?
He looks into my eyes and, without hesitation, says, Yes.
It's like when he punched me that night when I woke him up from his bad dream. I'm stunned. In shock. And so hurt. It's like his response was designed to hurt me, and the shock of his words unleashes my own defenses.
You're a fucking asshole.
I hurry past him, tears welling in my eyes. I don't want him to see how he's affected me. I need to get out of here. I head into the bedroom, throw the letter from Reese's ex-wife on the bed, and collect my clothes from the closet and the dresser before placing them on the mattress beside it. It feels worse than when Kyle cheated on me. Maybe because I was stupid enough to let someone back in. Opened myself up to be hurt like that. I keep waiting for him to come in and apologize. To say that he's sorry. But the man out there isn't the man I thought I was falling for. How could he say that? How could he throw us away? I want to believe it's just this breakdown he's having. But I can't. Maybe he wasn't even dwelling on the war. Maybe he was just sitting in there, stewing over us, and how he realized I'm not the man he wants to be with. After I grab some of my belongings from the bathroom, I collect my clothes and one big scoop off the bed and head back into the living room. Reese sits on the couch, facing away from me. Doesn't even have the balls to face me after what a dick he just was. I think about saying goodbye to him. But that's more than he deserves from me right now. I head out the door, but something stops me. Goodbye, Reese, I say. Not because I want to, but because I have to. Because I need the closure. I leave, and the moment I close the door behind me, the tears flow freely. I hurry to the car and throw my stuff inside. None of this feels real. How could we have spent so much time together, gotten so far, for it to end like this? How could we have gotten so far for it to all come crashing down in a day? It doesn't matter. I have to get out of here. I have to get far away. I have to leave all this behind and forget all about Reese. Even though I know I never really will. I burst into tears and collapse onto the steering wheel. I fucking love him. How could he do this to me? Why doesn't he want to be with me? Chapter 38. Reese. What have I done? The physical pain I'm experiencing is more acute than ever. Why did he say he loves me? I love him too. But it didn't make what I had to do any easier. I kept fighting doing the right thing. But when he came out of the bedroom, I knew I had to find a way to get rid of him. I had to save him from the hurt. I was awful to him. Terrible, but I had to be. I had to make him feel like I was a bastard for not believing in him to get him to leave, because if I just said that I didn't want to hurt him, he would have stayed. He would have convinced me that we could get through it, and I know where that leads. I had that same discussion with Melanie so many times before the end. And even if he was willing to suffer, I'm not willing to watch him become an empty person because of who I've become. He may think I'm a terrible person forever for how I just treated him, but I would have been a selfish monster to keep him here any longer when I know how the story ends, when I've already played it out once before. Now he'll run. That's who he is. But I have to believe he would have done that anyway. Once it all fell apart. At least now he still has his life in his body. At least I haven't totally destroyed him the way I could have. Running is what he knows. Running is what he's good at. He's a survivor. But that doesn't make me feel better about how far I let it get. I knew this was on the horizon. That the darkness would return. But I entered the fantasy that he could make me better. I wanted to believe we could push through, but after the despair of this latest encounter crippled me, I knew better. I believe the same thing with her. With my poor, beautiful Melanie, who I sucked the life out of. This isn't a battle I'll ever win. No one wins with PTSD. And as much as I tried to convince myself that we could fight together, if it was that easy, Melanie never would have gotten so hurt. I never would have ruined her life. I promised myself I would never hurt anyone the way I hurt her. He'll never know. But I didn't do this because I don't care about him, or because I didn't believe in him. I did it because I care about him so much, and can't bear the thought of wrecking his life. Why did you leave, Jay? The thought lingers, even though I know the answer. No, Jay, you deserve better than this life, so much better. I sit in silence, reeling in the physical pain from the horrible reminder that Melanie's letter awoke within me, still struggling with the powerful anxiety that's crippled me, the anxiety I had to fight with my everything to find the energy, the will to stand up and help Jay get out of my life forever. This isn't his fight. I lie back down on the couch, waiting for the pain to subside. But after what just happened, the intensity and excitement of it all, that's not likely. I might even have to call out of work tomorrow and just lie right here. Fuck me. Fuck me to hell. I can't have happiness, not like other people. I'm not kidding myself anymore. This is my life. This is all I can hope for. The silence, utter loneliness, and despair. I'm so sorry, Jay. I'm so sorry, Melanie. At least I had a moment with him. A beautiful moment where the pain was dull and the pleasure so powerful. At least in more lucid moments, I'll be able to cling on to that the way I once clung on to Jay's body. Chapter 39. Jay. I push my bedroom door open. I have to start packing. I'm out of here. How could Reese say that to me? The other night, I could have sworn, as we looked into each other's eyes, we felt the same way for each other. That he was just on the brink of telling me how much more he felt for me. Was I so wrong? And then on top of that, to tell me that I'm not strong enough? That I'm just going to leave him? How can he think that little of me? It doesn't matter. I need to erase him from my mind. Tomorrow, I'm getting the fuck out of town. I'm heading to Chicago. That was always the plan, anyway. I knew I'd have to move on at some point. God, how stupid could I have been for fucking with the boss? Now I don't have any choice but to leave. I can't ever show my face back at the factory. Right when I finally find a reason to change. A reason to settle down. Everything goes to shit. I don't want to run. I'm so tired of always running. I pack my duffel bag with as much shit as I can, take it out to the car, and shove it in the back seat. I return to the house and keep grabbing things, making a pile in the middle of the room. At least I don't have much. My nomadic lifestyle makes it so easy for me to move on again. I grab a pile of clothes and carry it out to the car. Gotta go. Always gotta go. I throw it in the passenger seat with the other crap I grab from Reese's house. I try to close the door, but it jams on some of the clothes that are starting to fall out. I open it back up and move some shit around. When I notice an envelope in the clothes that I piled in here from Reese's place. It's the letter from his ex-wife. I must have snatched it by accident with the clothes after I set that stuff on the bed. This is what Reese is running from. His past. He can never escape it. It's always there. Whether it's a memory creeping into his thoughts while he sleeps or a letter from a woman who loved him, no matter what he does, it's always there. I'm no different. No matter where I go. No matter how hard I try to escape the pain, it's always there, following me. It chases me, not in the way that Reese's demons haunt him, but in its own twisted way. What's going to happen if I change the city one more time? Change of faces? Change of names? Change of jobs? But there will still be pain. There's always pain. That's what Reese has learned, too. I gaze at my stuff, piled up in the passenger seat, not even in a box or suitcase. It's a great symbol of what my life really is, messy, jumbled, chaotic. Do I really want to head up to Chicago, only to find myself running into this same fate? I could do it so easily. But I don't want to. I'm tired. I glance back at the house. Charlie stands in the doorway. He doesn't have that playful expression on his face, the one I'm accustomed to.
Want to talk about it?
He asks as he walks down the porch steps and approaches me. He glances into the car.
Man troubles?
Not really troubles. It's over.
I know you probably don't want an old man butting into your life, but that's what I'm about to do.
Won't matter. He doesn't want me.
I saw the way he was ogling you when you boys were here, and I know the difference between a man who's smitten and a man who wants more than just to fuck around. Maybe I wasn't always good at sensing it with the guys I was with, but I can sense it with others. That man cares about you.
Whatever, I say. But I want to believe him, and considering everything we've been through, it's hard for me not to.
A fight is just a fight. It doesn't have to be the end, he says.
It reminds me of what Reese said about not running. Maybe this is the demon I have to confront. He sets his hand on my shoulder.
You okay?
He asks. I shake my head as my chin quivers. Not really.
Let's have some tea, he suggests. Just chat with an old man for a bit. You don't have to leave right now.
Thank you, Charlie. He leads me back inside, and I tell him about everything that's happened between us. I share how I feel about Reese and how I thought he felt about me, about Reese's past, and then about our confrontation tonight. When I'm finished, Charlie says,
Well, here's some more unsolicited advice. He's been through hell and back, and now he's got this guy who he's getting serious with who's pulling him out of his comfort zone, and he's scared as fuck of fucking up your life with his PTSD. Think about if you were getting into a relationship with someone who had cancer. You think they'd be eager to let you sign on while they had to endure treatments and basically put you through hell while they were dealing with it? That's what we're talking about here.
It's more than that. He doesn't believe I can handle it. He knows how I live my life, and he thinks I'm gonna run.
He was having an episode. I'm sure it felt painful when you opened up to him and told him you love him. But you deserve to talk to him about this again. Not just what he said in the middle of the worst of it.
He's right. I know he is.
You can run off now and never know the truth. Go ahead. Prove him right.
I know you're scared. He might really not feel the way you feel. But do you want to spend the rest of your life wondering what might have happened if you'd stuck around to fight for him? He expects you to run. But if you stay, you can show him that this is important to you. That he's important to you.
I don't want to run again, I admit. I don't know what good it'll do me. It's always the same story everywhere I go. Until I met him, that is. I can't keep living like that.
So you're willing to work for the man who broke your heart? Even if he decides that he doesn't want you?
Yeah. I can't live like that anymore. If Reese wants me to go, he's gonna have to find a way to fire me.
That's the spirit, kid,
he says with a wink. Although just thinking about facing him again makes the tears pour from my eyes. God, I just know I'm gonna lose it in front of him. Charlie heads to bed, and I unpack my car, putting everything back in my room. Then I take the letter from Melanie and set it on my desk. I'll give this back to him tomorrow. Can't wait to see the fucking look on his face when he sees me and has to deal with this letter all over again, and when he realizes I'm not the kid he thought would just run at the first sign of trouble, that I'm bigger than that now. Although he's the reason for that. He's made me better in so many ways. And even if he doesn't want me, I have to give him credit for that. I lie in bed. It's going to be a lonely night. The loneliest night I've had in a while. I'm used to him holding me. Used to the occasional kisses on my forehead right before he drifts off. Mad as I am, I keep replaying our time together over and over again in my head. The laughs, the pleasure, the connection. I wasn't imagining it. Mean as he was tonight, I can't believe that he really meant it. When I got home, he was cold and distant. That letter set him off, made him think about his marriage to Melanie. I'm half tempted to open it just to pry, but I'm not going to disrespect him like that. He said she left him because of how distant he became, and she couldn't handle it anymore. Is he afraid that if we really let this turn into something, I'll do the same thing? He doesn't understand how I feel. I don't give a shit about the episodes, even not seeing a fucking show tonight. Does he think I would just leave him when it got hard, abandon him? As I dwell on his motives, I'm pissed that I left. I should have fucking stayed and duked it out with him. It was my fight-or-flight response, and damn, am I ever good at flying. It was just so hard to face his rejection. God, I nearly shut down when he pushed me away. I remind myself of how much pain he was in when I got home. There's more to this than he's letting on. And like Charlie said, I deserve an answer. A real answer.
Chapter 40. Reese. I feel like shit as I stand in my office, the tension lingering from my panic attack yesterday. It wasn't so bad that I couldn't get out of bed today. I pushed myself to come into work because I knew I needed the distraction, but it was nearly impossible to get out the door. I even had to take a fucking Uber just to get here. I didn't have the strength to drive. It's not as bad as I feared, but it's bad enough that I'm glad I did what I did. That I saved Jay. The door to my office opens, and Jay storms in. Fuck, he's here? What the hell? I would have sworn after our fight that he would take off. He kept me up most of the night, as I considered calling him again and again, apologizing for what an asshole I'd been, begging him to take me back. But what I did wasn't to make me feel better, it's to make his life easier. As I stand up from my desk, he approaches quickly, as though he's about to punch me. The veins in his neck push forward, his face is bright red. His hair curls naturally, revealing how little he did to it this morning, reminding me of all those mornings when he let it fall naturally rather than gelling it. He throws a letter down on my desk. Melanie's letter. I didn't find it last night after he left, but I didn't care. I wasn't interested in reading it anyway. "I want you to fucking tell me what's really going on," he says. "We don't have anything else to talk about. I call bullshit on everything you said last night. Really? A letter comes from the ex-wife who left you, you freak out over a panic attack, and then try to spin it around like the reason you want out is because you believe I'll run when things get hard? I've been replaying everything that's been going on between us over and over again in my head. And unless you were one hell of a fucking actor all this time, I'm not the only one falling in love here." Shit. It's even worse than I thought. "Jay," I begin. "I was hoping it wouldn't come to this. I had the strength to get rid of him once. I was hoping that's all I would need strength for. I'm not done talking. Now you be honest with me right now and tell me what this is really about. Do you really think that I would leave you like your ex-wife? Do you think that I'm that kind of guy?"
He breathes intensely, as though he just used up an inordinate amount of strength saying that. God damn it. Time for the truth. Jay, I didn't think you'd be like my ex-wife because you'd leave. I thought you'd be like her because you'd stay. All his defensiveness, his anger, his tension dissolves. I've thrown him, totally dismantled the only argument that he'd prepared for. You don't know what it's like to watch someone you care about, someone who was so happy, filled with life, disappear. She used to bounce around at parties. She was the girl who would make everyone laugh. That's how I fell for her. I was at a friend's place. There were about 20 people there, and she came up to me and said, "You're cute, mind giving me a ride?" I told her I didn't bring a car. She was like, "Who said anything about a car?" I can't help but laugh even now about how forward she was, how bold. Throughout college, we would go to every party, and she was known for this loud, powerful laugh. When people heard it, they would just be captivated. It enchanted them, made them think, "Who the fuck is this girl, and how is she so fucking happy?" And we were happy together. I honestly didn't know that it was possible to be that happy with another human being. But when I was with her, everything was magic. She was a vision, and everything I wanted at the time. But when I got back from Iraq, all I could see was darkness. And no amount of magic could save me from what I'd become. Day in and day out, I watched as the woman I loved tried to reach me. She did everything she could. And after Caleb died, after he killed himself, I realized it was just getting worse. I remember one afternoon, I was just sitting on the couch staring forward because, like last night, that's all I could do. I was crippled with anxiety and paranoia. I was paralyzed by this fear that had overtaken me, and she sat on the recliner beside me, being there for me, and I just looked at her and saw the dead expression on her face. She told me, "I can't do this anymore." She meant keeping on like that without me getting any help. And the look in her eyes, the despair in her voice, reminded me of what I had to look at every morning in the mirror. And you don't know how horrible it is to ruin another person's life until you have to be witness to the pathetic person they've become, the miserable, empty void of a person they've become because of you. So I set her free. "You told me she left you," Jay says. "She did, after I told her I didn't love her anymore." Tears slide down my face, but I'm not ashamed of how I felt about Melanie. I'm not ashamed of how I protected her from the person I became. It was the only thing I knew would get rid of her. If she'd known it was just to protect her, she wouldn't have left. She would have tried to be noble. She would have wanted to be there for me. But I didn't want that. I didn't want anyone there. I wanted her to leave so that I could curl up into a ball and disappear forever. "I'm not okay, Jay. What you've seen are moments. You don't understand how bad it gets and how much it can take over my life. All this time we've shared has been incredible, but it's a lie. I've been able to slide by for a little while because I was lucky. But just ask my therapist. She knows just how bad it can get, even in a good year. I'm lucky to be able to make it to work during the really bad periods. But it's a fight every day to look like I'm normal. I can do that with employees. But not with someone I care about. Someone I care so fucking much about." "You don't get to make that choice," he says. "That wasn't right of you to make it for her, and you sure as hell don't get to make it for me. How dare you think that you had a right to decide, after everything we've shared, that you knew what was best for me? I'm not a child, Reese. I may fucking act like it sometimes, but I have a choice in this. but I just don't want you to make a choice that you're going to spend the rest of your life regretting. I don't want you to look back at all your time with me and wish you had been somewhere else with someone else, to feel like you're dead inside because I killed you, because I couldn't be there for you. He tilts his head, a sober expression shifting across his face. Oh my God, he says. This isn't just about Melanie, is it? You feel responsible for Caleb's death, too, because you couldn't help him. And then you felt like you were doing the same thing to Melanie, watching her die on the inside, though, and knowing there was nothing you could do because of everything you were going through. That's it, isn't it? I turn from him because he's so fucking right, but I'm embarrassed that he can see through me like this. He moves toward me, but I back away toward the wall. Jay, please. I was strong enough last night, but I can't do it today. Reese, this isn't fair. I get to choose what I do with my life. Why are you even talking to me after the horrible shit I said to you last night? I ask, looking back at him. Because I wasn't willing to believe you meant it, and if you did, I needed you to show me that again, to shut down what hope I had that what we shared was real, what I felt was real, but now I know it was. So you can sure as fuck bet I'm not going anywhere. Granted, I'm gonna fucking hate you for a while because you were an asshole, but I'm not leaving. What about me having a choice? I ask. Don't I have a right to decide who I hurt? I'm so tired of hurting people, Jay. And I sure as fuck don't want to hurt you. I'm not Melanie, he says. Melanie didn't sign up for this. She married you before you went to war, before you had issues, and what you had was bigger than either of you back then. But this, we can work through this. You're not the man you were back then. You're getting help now. You've made progress. And I've seen that it gets bad. You haven't seen how bad it can get. Even this isn't the worst. Then let me see. Let me decide for myself if I can handle it, because I do love you, Reese. I didn't think it was possible for me to feel this way for another person. Love you so much that even after you were a complete dick to me, it still wasn't over for me. Let me in. Don't shut me down now when we could be so happy together. I hate myself right now because I want it so much. I want to be with him, but I'm still scared as shit that this'll blow up in both of our faces. And what will you do when a year from now, or 5 years from now, when you've had to coach me out of every panic attack, when you've had to wake up time and time again to me nearly about to attack you in bed over some nightmare? Melanie couldn't even sleep in the same bed with me when it got really bad. Is that what you'll do? Or what about when I can't go out anywhere with you because I don't even want to leave the bed? How will you handle that? He approaches me, not breaking eye contact, not even flinching. He takes my hand. Why don't we find out together? The warmth of his touch offers me comfort. Comfort I'm ashamed of accepting. He places his other hand against my cheek, equally comforting. Let's do this together, Reese. As he leans into me, I don't refuse him. I just kiss him. Kiss him because I want his lips on mine so badly. Because a night without him was already too much for me. Because even if I'm making the wrong decision here, even if I'm being selfish, I want him more than I can bear. Hearing him offer to do this with me is too much for me to resist. It's not that I don't want to be alone. It's that I don't want to be without Jay. Not for another day. Not ever again. Chapter 41. Jay. Reese's kiss is as intoxicating as ever. It's the sort of kiss that dissolves all the confusion from yesterday. He wants me. He cares about me. I came here thinking I could be wrong, an idiot who desperately wanted to believe in something that was never there to begin with. I'm so fucking glad Reese showed me how right I was. He starts to break our kiss, but I slide my hand around his head and pull him back. I don't want to stop, I say between kisses. I don't want it to end. We enjoy the moment, embrace it, and I feel all the tension in him relax with the tension I've carried around since our fight last night. When we finally catch our breath, Reese whispers, "I love you so much, Jay." He leans back. "I'm sorry for what I said. I really just wanted to do what was best for you. I don't want to make you unhappy. I look at you so filled with life and energy, and I'm just horrified that I'm going to break you with everything that's broken me." "Don't be arrogant, assuming you're the only one who's broken," I say with a smirk. He cracks a smile. I see, finally, hope in his expression, hope we might actually be able to make this work. "I just haven't cared about anyone like this in so long, and that scares the fuck out of me. I love you too. But if you ever pull any of that fucking shit like last night, you're gonna lose another appendage." He laughs out loud, momentarily breaking the spell that he's been under. I know it's not that easy for him, but it's nice to think that, even for a moment, he's able to shake off some of the burden he's been carrying around. "I'm so fucking sorry." As soon as he kisses me again, that's all the apology I need. His body against mine. His love. His affection. I understand where he was coming from, especially now that I know what really happened with his ex-wife. Now that I know he pushed her away because he cared about her, and now that I know he was trying to protect me, I feel a warm tear on my cheek as we kiss. I can't tell if it's his or mine because I've felt a few as we've shared this moment. When we pull away from our kiss again, he looks into my eyes and I see that his concern has returned. "I don't need you to be here for me, Jay," he says. "I'm not here for you," I say. "I'm here for me, because I want to be with you, because I would rather be with you than anywhere else in the world. Because even the shittiest of moments with you is better than the best moment by myself, or with any of the guys I've ever been with." We embrace again, kissing away all the worry and stress of the night without each other, the night where we both thought we might never see each other again. I would have missed feeling his face against mine so much. I would have missed feeling his breath against me, feeling him inside me. When we settle, we pull apart and just breathe together, holding each other, not letting up our grips. I gaze into those familiar blue eyes. Eyes that make me feel so special and important, like that night we held each other, when he seemed to have the word love on his mind just as I did. "I guess we have to get to work today," I say, knowing that I'm killing the moment, but also knowing that we need a little break after the emotional roller coaster we've been on for the past 12 hours. He smiles. "That sounds like a good idea. No more slacking off in the office like this." My gaze settles on something I haven't forgotten, something that's weighed on my mind since I saw it, Melanie's letter. He turns to it, his sad expression returning. "Can't we just enjoy this moment?" I glare at him. He knows better. "Aren't you tired of running from this?" I ask. Releasing me, he approaches the desk and picks up the letter, which is even more crumpled up now that I had it in my clothes. He tears it open and pulls out a 4x6-inch photograph. It's the only thing inside. The picture is of a woman. Certainly Melanie, in her 30s, with shoulder-length blonde hair and bright blue eyes. Beside her is a man with dark, nearly black hair. They stand before a painting with a first prize blue ribbon on the side. Melanie cradles a baby in her arms, which is wrapped in a blue blanket. She has a bright smile on her face, her eyes glowing with light. This doesn't look like the woman Rhys described, jaded, bitter, destroyed. She's happy. A woman filled with life and zest, and with the whole world ahead of her. Rhys's face trembles, and he bursts into a fit of tears, pressing his thumb into the picture so hard that it bends. "It's okay. It's okay," I say, wrapping my arms around him for support. "I guess it'd be hard for anyone to see their wife moving on." He shakes his head. "No, no, it's not that. It's just, I thought I'd ruined her life forever." He continues sobbing, fighting to speak through the tears. "And I'm so happy to see that she's smiling again, that no matter what happened, I didn't take that from her forever." I study the painting behind her. It's just like the one in Rhys's living room, a profile of a man staring off. "It's the same painting she did before she left," he explains. "She had it in the garage, hadn't shown it to me. And when I found it, I knew that it was over. That this was all she saw every day when she looked at me. And I knew that I had to save her." "Looks like she turned that pain into something really productive," I say, acknowledging the honor she received for using that inspiration as she was moving on. "So you're clearly still her muse?" He nods as the tears continue rolling down his face. He flips the photograph over, and on the back, a handwritten message reads, "I miss you. Please call me." He drops the photograph and loses it in another fit of tears. He turns to me and wraps his arms around me, crying against me. I hug him, holding him close, being there for him now the way I always want to be there for him. "She's happy, Jay. She's really happy again." I hear the relief in his words. How good it feels for him to know that he didn't kill her like he thought he had. And I'm so glad that I can be here for him once again, that I can share this moment of ease with him where he's free of a demon that has haunted him for so long. "See," I say, "even if you do totally ruin my life, I'll get better." He laughs against me, and his sobbing transforms into a loud laugh as he pulls away from me, a bright smile across his red face. He wipes at his eyes with the back of his hands. "You're awful," he says. But he's all smiles now, and I'm glad that I can be here for that. As he stops wiping at the tears, he gazes at me again, his smile settling slightly. "Thank you so much," he says. "You have no idea what it means to me that you came here today. That you didn't run when you could have. And the things that you said. That you're even willing to forgive me for being a total asshole." Whoa, I didn't say you were forgiven for that. You're just going to have to put a lot of hours and work on this body to make up for it." "You're fucking amazing," he says, leaning in and kissing me again. We enjoy each other's affection until we calm down from the excitement of the morning. Then we part to do our jobs. But there's an ease as I work today. In knowing that when I get back to Rhys's place tonight, we're on the same page, that we both know how the other feels and where this is really going, and that he isn't going to try and pull some stunt like he did last night. It won't be easy. Nothing about being with Rhys has been easy, but I'm not with him because I want it to be easy. I'm with him because I care about him so much, and because since he's come into my life, it's become so much better. Because he's made me a better person and made me want to be a better person. And I just know there's so much more happiness in store for us. Epilogue. 10 years later. Rhys. Wait, Jay says as he grabs the corn casserole we made out of the back seat. He passes it to me and grabs the apple pie before closing the door. I snatch his free hand and pull him to me, planting a kiss on his sweet lips. His lips curl into a smile against my face. When I pull away, he says, "Well, wasn't that sweet?" We walk side by side up the drive to Shelley and Tyler's new place, chatting about the wreck of a front lawn that Shelley will likely be putting in some long hours working on during the spring. Reminds me of my own garden, the one that Jay and I have expanded, the one we work on together now. I thought I had a green thumb, but Jay has a talent for bringing even the weakest of plants back to life, just like he did with me. As we reach the door, I'm reminded of the first time we visited their home all those years ago, when Jay and I were so new, so scared of what we felt for each other. Now I'm holding my husband's hand as we visit some of our best friends, the first people either of us really opened up to and started allowing into our lives. I turn the knob and the door opens. "Hey, hey, hey," Jay announces. The screaming kids upstairs assure us that Shelley and Tyler's kids are as healthy and energized as usual. Michael, their youngest at 6 years old, rounds the corner at the top of the stairs. When he spots us, he calls out, "Uncle Reese and Uncle Jay are here." He races down and gives us hugs. His sister, now in her teens, follows shortly after him, acting far cooler than she used to act when we would babysit her and play hide-and-seek and dollhouse together. I hear she has a boyfriend now, so I'm sure she's way too cool for silly games now. Just a shame that her older brother Martin couldn't be here today because he has to work at his job up in Tennessee, where he's going to school. We lead the kids into the kitchen, where Shelley squats before the stove, assessing the turkey. Charlie sits at the kitchen table, sipping on a drink. "Why, hello there," he says. We always invite Charlie to Thanksgiving dinner with Shelley and Tyler, and he's become a good friend of ours as well.
"Boys, I could hardly tell you were here," Tyler says, eyeing Michael as he enters from the living room.
We hug, and Jay sets the apple pie and casserole on the counter while I approach Charlie, greeting him and making small talk. Jay asks Shelley what she needs help with. We came a little early to make sure we could assist before the other members of her family and some of our mutual friends arrived. Shelley and Tyler are two of the most welcoming people I've ever met, and I'm proud to be part of their circle. To have shared so many great memories with them, from bingo nights to Saturdays at Six Flags with them and their kids. While Jay, Shelley, and Tyler take charge of dinner, I tend to my responsibility, wrangling the kids. We play hide and seek, Michael screaming as loud as always every time I find him. I'm searching for them when the doorbell rings. "I've got it," I call since I'm already in the entryway, about to head up the stairs to find the kiddos. I open the door, and there she is. Melanie, with her bright blonde hair and eyes sparkling as she smiles, she's as beautiful as I remember her being when we first met. Her 10-year-old boy, Jared, has his arms around her hip, and her husband, Toby, is at her side. It's nice how relaxed I feel in this moment. It's not like back when I tried to avoid her calls. She's back in my life, but this time as a friend and confidant. After I opened the envelope with the picture she sent, Jay encouraged me to call her, and with the help of Jay and Laura, I eventually met up with her. It's taken years, but finally we've become close again, and I feel like I'm a better person because of it.
"Hi, Reese," she says,
her voice a sweet melody on my ears. It's a voice filled with life and energy, something she lacked for so long when we were together.
"Aren't you going to say hey to Reese?" Toby asks Jared. "Come on, be nice."
"Oh, I know he's shy," I say. I squat down until I'm eye level with him. "Nothing wrong with being a little shy, is there?" I wink and he smirks. I guide them into the kitchen where we all chat. Tyler tells me about the last game he played with his softball league. I glance over and catch Jay picking up Michael and twirling him around in a circle, Michael screaming loudly again. When he finishes, Jay glances at me. We've talked about kids. We keep talking about them. I know they're in our future, but we both want to wait until we're ready. And I think that time is coming sooner rather than later.
Jay winks at me, and a warm sensation fills my chest. I never believed I could have fallen so deeply in love with someone, not the way I have with Jay for all these years. It's an amazing dinner. We chat and catch up with everyone and eat until we're stuffed. Then when it ends, we head out, and I know now's the perfect time for my surprise. Before we go, I say. I reach into my pocket and retrieve an envelope, hand it to him. What's this? I sing happy birthday to him, and he grins as my voice cracks straight through the song. It's not really my birthday yet, he says as I reach the end. Shut it. It was the only way I could create a surprise out of it. He opens the envelope and pulls out two tickets to the Rita Rudner stand-up show. Oh my God, he says. I can't believe you got these. We're seriously going to her farewell tour?
Yep.
We're going to Vegas. I already booked our flights. You shouldn't have done that. Well, considering my pay raise and your new job as supervisor, neither of us is hurting. So I figured we could indulge this year. He hugs me. He deserves this, and so much more after 10 years together, 10 years of friendship, 10 years of love. As he pulls away, he kisses me. Thank you. That was really sweet. It's not the first stand-up show we've seen together, and it won't be the last. We've had a lot of laughs over the years. Not to say it's always been easy. In fact, some of the years were hard. I was right about the darkness. It came and consumed me the way it does every so often. There's no magic pill. The triggers don't fade. It wasn't 5 years ago when the depression got so bad that some days it was hard to breathe. But Jay stood by me and helped me get to my doctor's appointments, helped me through experimenting with new med combinations. He helped me out at work when I needed time off, which is what led to his new position. He more than stepped up to the challenge. So while I was right about this terrible thing within me, this thing that will never leave me, I was wrong about Jay. I didn't kill him. If anything, he's only become stronger and someone I can't imagine living without. Not because I need him for what's wrong with me, but I need him because he makes me a better human being. We head back to our house and stand in the bathroom after our shower, nude, getting ready for bed. I strap into my hands-free crutch. Jay says, I know we talk about kids, but what do you think? We're about ready. I beam. I've been waiting for him to say this with such confidence. I'm more than ready, I say. I wouldn't mind a few. And you're great with them. A few, I ask with a laugh. But I'd be happy to raise a dozen kids with him. No one else I'd rather raise kids with than my Jay. No. Seriously, this time, he says. Let's do it. I study his face. What are you looking at? Just how beautiful you are. Oh, the lines? Jay asks as he runs his forefinger across his crow's feet. Yeah. How they sit just right on your face. How they complement it, even. Not like this old thing you're stuck with. You mean this sexy silver fox? Jay runs his hands through my hair. I could have done a lot worse. I kiss him and push him back against the door frame. I wrap my arm around him and press against the small of his back so that his abs meet mine, and soon we're groping and stroking each other's bodies, our stiff cocks rubbing against each other's pelvises. I want his body more than ever. We hurry into the bedroom in a frenzy. I push him down onto the bed. Is this the fat dick you want inside you? I ask him as I raise his legs and pull him back to the edge of the bed. Yes, Reese. Oh, fucking God, yes. I spit on my cock and ease into him. It takes more time like this, but it reminds me of the first time we ever fucked raw, when I got to come inside him and make him totally mine, and when he did the same to me. when we were set free of all those remaining boundaries between us, and it was just love, our love. I remove the crutch, and we toss and turn, crawling around on the bed, shifting positions. He fucks me for a bit, and we swap again. He ends up on his back again, his favorite way to come. On my knees, I push into him, watching his expression, lines and all, as his eyes roll back in that familiar way that lets me know just how much he's enjoying what I'm giving him. Sweat drips off my forehead and onto his tight body, the one he's earned through all his dedication at our local gym, memberships we both take full advantage of. He starts to reach for his dick, but I snatch his wrist. Then I grab his other and push them back against the mattress, pinning him down while I fuck him. He gazes up at me, eagerness in his eyes, excited about what we share. I shake my head. You're gonna come my favorite way. The way I know how to make him come, the way I prefer it. Fuck yes, Reese, he says. I can see the trust in his eyes, trust that I'm going to fulfill him in the way that's most satisfying to him, in the way that leaves him breathless. I fuck him harder, and soon he's moaning. I glance down as the cum shoots out of his cock and across his body. I did that, I say with pride. Then I come inside him, and the explosion sends sharp, powerful sensations racing through me. I collapse on him, resting in his seed and sweat, enjoying him being filled with me. This is who we are, totally together, totally wrapped in each other's love. Our life together is so much more than I could ever have hoped for, could have even have dreamt for myself after I returned from the war. We're gonna need to get those panties out this weekend, Jay teases. What do you think? I think I'm one lucky son of a bitch, I say. Who would have thought all it would take was one asshole to shove me down at work? Some asshole I can shove down every fucking day now. Jay beams, and I imagine all the years to come. Years I'm so looking forward to. The end.
This has been Between These Sheets, written by Devin McCormick, narrated by Michael Pauly. Copyright 2017 by Devin McCormick. Production copyright 2017 by Devin McCormick.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.